If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Today on Rambling About Cars, Toyota tells people not to sell their Land Cruiser out of Japan. Meanwhile, Ford Bronco owners are trying to sell their Bronco to anybody they can. An electric Camaro sedan is coming, maybe? But what you really want to hear about is Bruce and Smith's excellent vintage adventure from the past weekend. So all you fervored flippers out there trying to get the most from your purchase, it's podcast time. I'm Christopher Smith. Across the way is Chris Bruce, and how are things going, man?
Things are going good. Let's dig into the news this week, because it's been an interesting week.
It has.
Let's start with this Toyota Land Cruiser story that kind of blew up for us, because it's kind of weird, and we just got an update to it today, or today as of this recording, so we've got a little bit more to say beyond that. But
let me give a little bit of perspective here. I mean, this story first broke several days ago. And I know listeners, they don't really know kind of the behind the scenes. Our traffic on this particular news item has just been nonstop. And it's been kind of a jaw dropper for us. Bruce, why don't you go ahead and explain what's going on here? Obviously, we don't get the new Toyota Land Cruiser.
Right.
We are not getting the United States.
Yeah, we are not getting the new Land Cruiser in the U.S. Obviously, it's going to be available in Japan. It's Toyota, after all. That makes sense. But Toyota is having anyone that buys one there, at least for the first little bit.
12 months.
They are not allowed to sell it for 12 months.
We don't know
how long this offer is going to be going on.
Okay.
But yeah, exactly. So if you buy a new Land Cruiser in Japan, you have to sign a contract saying that you will keep it for 12 months. And we've seen that before with things like the Ford GT and whatnot. But this has an extra little wrinkle to it, because you are not especially not allowed to sell it to a foreign entity. There's apparently some sort of law in Japan. I'm looking for the story. It's like the foreign... just a moment. I will tell you exactly what it is, because it's got this big, complicated...
like a foreign exchange law.
Yes,
where
foreign exchange and foreign trade law of Japan. And so under that law, and Toyota wants to be doubly sure that people don't do it, you cannot sell your Land Cruiser as a Japanese buyer outside of Japan. And reading kind of between the lines, we know that the Land Cruiser... It can be a popular vehicle amongst, let's say, unsavory folks in certain parts of the world, because it is known to be so reliable
and very well said
and sturdy. And apparently that is what Toyota is worried about, that they don't want people in Japan buying these, selling them for a profit, and sending them across the world to these unsavory folks. But it's just interesting that, like, they're serious about it. Like, you're signing a contract, and if you break the contract, they say you will never be able to buy a Toyota in Japan again.
Well, and they also extend it to dealerships. They say that any selling dealerships that sell a Land Cruiser to a person that then resells it out of Japan, the dealership will be penalized. So I don't know. I mean, do you think that's really the case, or do you just think Toyota, they don't want people just turning around and flipping their brand new Land Cruiser for a quick profit?
I mean, you and I have both been writing about cars for a while. I've never heard a company forcing people to sign contracts to keep them from selling a vehicle to another country. Like I said, you've seen it with like the Ford GT or stuff like that, where you need to kind of keep that exclusivity. But I've never heard about something like this before, and that's what makes it so weird. So I would say Toyota wouldn't do it if they didn't have some sort of concern in the back of their head. You know,
I mean, you make a good point there in that it's not focused on reselling in Japan. It's focused on selling outside. I don't know. I mean, obviously I'm not from Japan. I've never visited. I would love to visit. It's a great country. I'm just not that familiar with their laws, to be honest. But I tell you what, it sure generated all hell kinds of talk and comments and criticisms. I think we have something like 40 comments on this story. And I mean, everybody's saying, well, you know, that's not the case at all, to, well, you know, Toyota is just trying to keep people from flipping it for a quick profit. So, yeah, this is one of those news items where, OK, it's not like a new vehicle debut of something that we've been waiting for. It's just one of those oddball items.
Yeah.
That for some reason just resonates throughout the global automotive community. And I mean, that's the case here. And it resonated so much, not just with us. It was around
apparently at
all the sites. Yeah.
Because today we put up a follow up that Toyota put out. We don't usually do this and put out the full statement that an automaker puts out, but I'll put it up here. It's several paragraphs.
A statement. It's like a, a small manifesto?
Something like that. Yeah. For anyone watching on YouTube, I will be sharing it right now. And it just goes into crazy detail that says Toyota and Toyota dealers share a common understanding that when selling vehicles to customers in Japan, the sale does not end. The sale does not end, but that each dealer will continue to have a responsible relationship with the consumer in terms of after sale service in order to protect the safety and security of the customer. And they, like I said, they talk about that foreign exchange and foreign trade law. Mm-hmm. It would be a major problem, not only for Toyota dealerships, but also for Toyota dealers and the Toyota Motor Corporation. It's just wild that they apparently are taking this concern this seriously.
Right. And I mean, let me read a little bit more of this here.
Of course, please. Yeah.
Because I think... this reads, I know it's a statement, an official statement from Toyota, but I mean, it just reads like legalese to the nth degree. The statement goes on here, as a manufacturer that supplies vehicles, Toyota Motor Corporation, from the standpoint of compliance with laws and regulations, has alerted all Toyota dealers nationwide to the possibility of the above violation of the foreign exchange and foreign trade law in order to minimize the risk of legal violations. With this as a reference, we recognize that each dealer has made a decision from the perspective of legal compliance and has received a written pledge from the customer. These measures were taken based on the recent global situation and the characteristics of the Land Cruiser. I'm not really sure what they're meaning about characteristics. And we believe they do not violate anti-monopoly law. So...
this is either really, really good marketing or Toyota is just really afraid. And I'm not sure which it is, because if it's good marketing, it's genius. Like, we think our vehicle is so good that people are going to buy them in Japan and they're going to send them to bad people who are going to do them with bad things with them across the world.
And like, they're basically painting them like, they're war profiteers or something, right. Does this apply to every, I'm assuming this would apply to every vehicle sold in Japan. I mean, it doesn't just apply to one vehicle. I mean, they're talking about the foreign exchange and foreign trade law.
They do specifically say that thing, the recent global situation, and I'm not sure what they mean by that, and the characteristics of the Land Cruiser, we do not believe violate the anti-monopoly law.
There's some ambiguity right there. Let's figure out what the recent global situation is, and then let's figure out the special characteristics of the Land Cruiser. We know Land Cruisers are big, they're pretty beefy, they're reliable, but
they have legacy for reliability, and yeah, it's just hilarious that an automaker would go to such lengths to prevent this vehicle from being sold outside of one market.
Well, there was a commenter in the original article that I identified with this comment, because they asked, well, if these nefarious individuals in these regions are seeking a tough vehicle and they might have to wait to get their new Land Cruiser, aren't they just going to go get the Hilux, which is indestructible anyways? I mean,
yeah.
Does this apply to the Hilux also?
Well, that's the thing. You get the Hilux other places, although you get the Land Cruiser other places. It's just a funny story. And that's kind of why we're bringing it up. It's
exactly.
It's funny because it's so like Toyota is taking something so seriously that I'm not even sure is actually an issue. That, you know, are these nefarious people in Japan like buying up Land Cruisers and shipping them to buyers elsewhere? I don't think that's a thing.
Well, I mean, that's a question. I mean, we're not there. We're not aware of what, I mean, when you think about what's going on, and I'm getting a little ahead here. When you think about what's going on right now in the United States with the Bronco that we're going to talk about shortly,
just a minute here. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure how aware other parts of the world are that, you know, people are just going nutsoids for the Bronco and they're trying to resell them. Maybe that's a bigger issue in Japan with the Land Cruiser than we realize. And they're trying to clamp down a little bit on it. I mean, Ford, like you said earlier, there was a big deal with the new Ford GT where Ford wouldn't allow buyers to immediately flip them for a large profit. I mean, is there some smoke and mirrors going on here with the with the legal ease? We're just gonna go by Toyota's statement.
Yeah, that's all we have to go by.
That's the statement that they put out. So, sorry, folks that might be listening who were hoping to get a new Land Cruiser in areas that maybe you couldn't get one. Looks like it's not going to happen.
I will say this, though. So we do have analytics for Rambling About Cars. I know our listenership in Japan is in the single digits. But if any of you are listening and want to ship Smith and I a new Land Cruiser, specifically the TRD that we're looking at now with the cool Toyota thing. I mean, I know you won't be able to buy a Toyota again, but we'll take one.
Hey, let's break this down. They're not allowed to sell. Didn't say anything about
give. You can give it to us. Yeah.
Or loan. This can just be like a loan.
Sure.
And then we can analyze the new Land Cruiser to determine its special characteristics. This is brilliant stuff. We would be very happy to do that. Yeah.
So any of our single digit listeners in Japan, let us know. But moving on, we're talking about one car that
apparently, you're not supposed to resell.
Exactly. To a car that a lot of people,
everybody is trying to resell. I can bring this up here on the screen unless you got it handy there, Bruce.
Either way, if you got it, go for it. I got it here too.
I'll snap it. So now this story is actually, at this point, it's a little over a week and a half old. But we started noticing
still happening because it's into this today.
It's definitely still happening. Yeah. Happening. It came up where, okay, the Ford Bronco, the 2021 Ford Bronco is finally reaching customers. And as you do, there's certainly demand for Bronco. There are certainly people that want it. So we started seeing them pop up on eBay. And I'm sure they're for sale in other parts too. But I mean, eBay, anybody can log into eBay, check things out. And then the article we wrote, 2021 Ford Bronco flippers are asking absurd prices on eBay. How absurd
are these prices?
They're so absurd. I got nothing there. I can't do the Rodney Dangerfield bit on command here, but I can tell you that as of July 21st, there was at least one that was at $150,000 on eBay. $150,000.
I'm looking at one right now, or best offer, $175,000.
$175,000. Is that buy it now?
That is a buy it. Or buy, no, it is. You know what? I got to click on it. I don't think it is buy it now.
Buy it now or a starting
bid? Right. Yes, it is buy it now.
Buy it now. Well, hey, there's your impulse buy. If you want a Bronco, if you want a Bronco and you need it right now, actually, Bruce, is that an actual Bronco or is that a Bronco that's yet to be built that somebody's trying to sell, because I saw a lot of those when I was scouring eBay.
One has not been built yet. Your vehicle is there, you go, for production. This is a vehicle that does not technically exist.
That's a very reliable source right there, because we know there've been no
does exist. Look, two things down, $110,000. I'm saving you money. It's at whatever dealer this is right now. I can't tell you where it's located yet. But
right. When I was browsing through back on July 21st, and I was browsing again today, I was noticing some of these appeared to be dealers, but a lot of them seemed to be individuals or maybe smaller dealers that bought one, you know, like a smaller used car dealership.
Yeah, I'd say it's about 50-50 from what I'm saying.
But here's the big question. And we talked about this a little bit in the article. We're seeing them listed on eBay for $150,000, $160,000, $175,000. Which, by the way, if you want to pay $175,000 for a Ford Bronco, I mean, that'll also get you a G63 Mercedes. And, I think I'm taking the AMG over the Bronco any day of the week
at that price. Yeah.
You know what? Yeah. You could have a Bronco first edition or an AMG G63. Yeah. That's a tough decision, but are people really paying these prices now on eBay?
Kind of.
As long as you have an account, you can log in and you can do a search for completed auctions that have sold.
Oh, you don't even need an account. You can just,
need an account anymore.
Oh,
jeez.
Oh man.
I've been trying to stay away from eBay because I sometimes fall for those buy it now impulse buys. I mean, I bought like a $200,000 Corvette just the other day. I mean, it was a C8. It was a Z06. I'm going to get it in like 2 years.
Ooh, that's nice. Yeah.
I know. Yeah. I just couldn't wait. It's like, buy it now. Well, yeah, I was going to go out to McDonald's and get something to eat, but now let's get this Corvette instead. Right.
So, but we're saying this, the most expensive first edition Bronco that we, from completed listings that is sold on eBay, $109,500. And that is a two-door. And that was actually a bidded auction. That wasn't a buy it now thing. 27 right. bids got it to $109,500.
And that's important because, as of a week ago when I wrote this article, the most expensive one that I had bought was a final bid price of $88,900, which, I mean, that's still well over sticker, but sure. It shows, you know what, for the right Bronco, in this case, you know, a two-door first edition, you know, I mean, people are stepping over six figures to get one. Are they spending $150,000? Are they spending $175,000? God, I hope not. If you are listening and actually considering that, no, just step back. Be patient for a little bit. This is a Ford Bronco.
Until tomorrow when you have a clear head.
I mean, we always see this when there's a hot new vehicle that comes out. There's demand. People want to get them right away. And here's another thing that I'm also going to mention. And we're going into opinion land here, but I've spent a lot of years in the classic car side of things, in the buying, selling side of things. I suspect there are a lot of people clamoring to get a first edition Bronco because it's a limited edition. There's only going to be so many of them made. They're going to be valuable. They'll probably be more valuable than the regular Broncos. Bruce, I mean, do you think a first edition Bronco will ever sell for what they're selling for right now? Six figures.
No, absolutely.
Because a brand new Ford Bronco first edition sticker price, I think, is something like $63,000 or so, somewhere around there. Low six, low to
995 for the 4-door, 61 for the 2-door.
Okay. So low to mid 60s. They're going to be rare,
but it's not that
a badge. I mean, it's a fully loaded Bronco with a first edition badge. So, I mean, you have that prestige of, you know, this is a specific model.
So I was thinking about this today. The thing that separates the spending this much for a Bronco versus some other vehicles that I'll name in a moment is the fact that the Bronco is not going to be a limited edition vehicle.
Right.
That Ford is going to make as many as they can sell, and we already know it's only going to improve. We have lots of reports that a hybrid version is going to come out. We know that whether they call it the Raptor or
Warthog,
the Warthog, yes, we know that will be a hotter version is going to come. Like, we know other stuff is happening. This is not a Subaru S209 where it's a one-year thing, a BMW M5 CS where it's a one-year thing. This is not a vehicle that is going to be limited in any way. Like, and the thing is, the stuff on the first edition, you can get that on a top-level Bronco, assuming you could, you know, check enough option boxes. Right. You might not have that first edition badge, but other than that, you're going to get all the same equipment. So it's not that special of a vehicle. And that's why I don't understand why people would pay this much for one.
And I mean, we're looking at eBay auctions. These high ones were final bids. I mean, we know that there's always buyer's remorse that can crop up. I mean, we've all seen over the decades that eBay has been around now, people will jump into bids and then they'll back out for whatever reason. So, I mean, we see these final bid prices listed here on eBay. I mean, we're not able to contact these buyers and sellers. Just, I mean, it's
right to make sure the guy actually paid that.
It's their transaction.
Yeah.
But I mean, the fact that we're seeing several Broncos on eBay selling for pretty high prices. I mean, I made just a short list here today. I mean, what do I got here on my list of some other vehicles here? Bronco first edition four door. It was showing has sold at $105,000. It was a buy it now, but that was crossed off and it said best offer accepted. So presumably an offer under $105,000. A four door first edition, $100,000. Yeah, just over $100,000 on 32 bids. That two door first edition that you talked about, Bruce. And there are other Broncos on there as well.
Right.
If you're on YouTube, okay, yeah. If you can watch us on YouTube, we've got a list up there. What got me a Bronco base two door with a V6 and a Sasquatch package went for $60,000. Now, I think that might be the more desirable Bronco in the long run than a first edition, because it's just like the basic two door. With the off-road stuff. Like, right. No,
six months and you're going to be able to have that all day long.
Right,
you're basically paying the premium to have it right now rather than being patient and waiting 6-8 months and having no problem getting one of those.
Right. And that's really what it comes down to is, well, there's two camps, right? There's the one camp that says, I want the rare one. I want the first edition. I'm going to buy it. I'll put it in my garage. I'll leave it in its delivery attire with plastic still on the seats and everything. And then in 10 or 20 years, I'll take it to Barrett Jackson and sell it for $200,000. There are people thinking that. I can guarantee you there are people thinking that.
But that's not going to happen.
And that's not going to happen. And the reason I'll say that, back in 2006, 2007, I was working with a team that was basically contracted with Ford, and I was in a call center. It used to be the SVT call center, and at that time, the Shelby GT500 was coming out, and I would take calls and talk to people every single day that were really excited because, I mean, that's the first year for the GT500. People going nuts. They're checking their build order, when the car is going to get here. And I mean, a lot of those people talked to me at length about how they were going to put it in their garage, because this is going to be super valuable because Ford's only going to build a certain amount of them. And I mean, I'm sitting there. I couldn't dole out any advice. That wasn't my job. That was pure speculation. And with the company I was working with, you know, there could be some issues there, but I'm sitting there thinking, man, I mean, this is going to be limited, but it's not going to be that limited. And when you look, I mean, you can buy an 07 Shelby GT500 these days for pretty cheap.
Low 20s, right?
I'm sure you can get one in the low 20s. And these are people that probably paid 60 or 70 grand after markups. And I mean, we're 15 years almost down the road. So I see a lot of similarity between that and the Bronco. Only it's going to be worse with the Bronco, because at least the Shelbys were a limited version of the Mustang.
Right.
The Bronco,
it's only
the Bronco is just the Bronco. Right. So,
and we know that the Bronco is only going to get better. And we've talked about this before, you and I, that the Bronco is competing against the Wrangler, and we're having this beautiful little fight between Stellantis, whatever you want to call them, and Ford. And every time each one gets better.
Yeah. So,
like, you know,
good competition, but just seeing these prices, it's just like, well, hey, you know what? More power. If you list a Bronco for $175,000 on eBay and you manage to find somebody to pay it, bravo to you. Right. I mean, I hope you're not misrepresenting anything. Buyer beware. If you can be patient, you can get the Bronco that you want at sticker price, maybe a little bit over, because these are in demand and production is still limited. Because of the chip shortage, it's affecting all manufacturers. So there is a little bit of that still going on. But yeah, I mean, I haven't seen people losing their minds over a vehicle like this in a very, very long time. And
we saw a little bit with the Corvette. We saw it a lot with like the Hellcat and the Demon and stuff like that.
But the Demon was a legit, very limited production car.
True.
You're right. And the C8. I mean, yeah, we saw things. What we saw with the C8, we did see some flippers. I don't think I ever saw anybody trying to sell a C8 for $175,000.
Yeah, and the issue with that is that it was in the height of COVID, so that first year C8 is kind of legitimately rare because the Bowling Green factory was shut down for so long. So I guess this isn't like that, though, is basically what it comes down to. Like, if you want a Bronco, and from everything we hear, I haven't driven one. I know you haven't driven one. They sound great, but I wouldn't pay a premium for one. Just be patient. You know, they're going to cut, like, dealers are going to stop putting a premium on them, or people are going to stop selling them for these exorbitant prices. It's a car, and it's not a limited edition car. And even if it's a good car, hang on to what you have for 6, 8, 12, 18 months, and you'll be able to get one for sticker. Maybe there will even be some incentives on them.
Mm-hmm. Buying advice from the Chris's, everybody.
Yeah.
You heard it here. Just take it easy. Bronco's cool. Money is also cool. You don't need to bankrupt yourself. So exactly. Let's move on from Bronco to another iconic vehicle.
Sure.
And this is some really fresh news. And I think you wrote this just today.
Yesterday.
Oh, yesterday.
Yeah.
Chevy Camaro. We know the sales are not good. They haven't been good for a while. Obviously, COVID it affected things. The semiconductor shortage has affected things. But the sales were going down steadily.
Even before that.
Before that. Yeah. I'm not sure I really understand why, because I think the Camaro looks good. I think it's a great performance vehicle. I think it feels overall to me a little bit better than Mustang. I've had a chance to be in both, and the Camaro's visibility sucks. It just flat out, it's terrible. But I have a Mustang. I have an older Mustang in my garage right now, and given the choice between a new Mustang or a Camaro, I'm not exactly sure which one I would take, because the Camaro just really stands out to me. Nobody's buying them, and something could be changing.
But let's dig into this.
Yeah, sorry.
So the rumor is that Chevy is planning on replacing the Camaro with an electric car. Okay, that's not too surprising. But an electric sedan.
That will be called Camaro. Am I understanding
that right?
Called
Camaro, yes.
Yeah, I mean, they're not just saying we'll get rid of the Camaro.
No.
Here's our new performance sedan. So they're making a new Camaro electric sedan, allegedly. It's just rumor. There's no confirmation on this.
We don't know that, but here, let me give a little bit of background here. This is coming from Automotive News. Smith, you've been writing about cars for a while. Automotive News is not your normal, like, enthusiast focus site.
Right.
You know, Motor One, Jalopnik, Autoblog. We try to cater to enthusiasts, and sometimes we report on rumors and stuff. But Automotive News is very much a business focused site.
Yes.
Whether that's dealers, whether it's suppliers, industry people, they don't care about enthusiasts. They're not trying to stir up rumors to get clicks. That's not what they do. So when you hear something from them, you perk up your ears a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And so they have this very long story about the future of General Motors as they transition away from combustion engines and towards electric power plants. And there is two mentions of Camaro in this entire story, which we thought was interesting enough to build a story out of. So I'm mm-hmm. going to read you the bits about the Camaro from the story because they're so short that I can. Mm-hmm. So it says, some existing vehicles, such as the Chevy Malibu and Camaro, won't stick to the standard cadence of facelifts and redesigns. Instead, they will ride out the current generation before making way for EVs.
Okay, and that by itself, okay, not a big deal. They're going to stick it out for a while, and then when they're gone, they're going to be replaced with a new EV. But
here's the thing. At the end of the story, or kind of three quarters of the way through the story, they have a little table and they show a bunch of existing Chevy, Buick, and Cadillac models. But they specifically say Chevy Camaro, it will end in 2024 and it will be replaced by a performance EV sedan. And in addition to that, it has stuff that we kind of know, that the Cadillac, the current XT4, XT5, XT6 will be replaced by electric crossovers called the Lyric, Optiq, and Symbolique.
And they mention those names specifically.
Yes, they do.
But they don't mention a different name for this performance EV sedan. Now, maybe it's because that name hasn't been confirmed yet, or maybe
they're going to use the Camaro name.
Camaro name, yeah.
But the thing is, and the reason that we reported on this is that this is not just a fly-by-night source. Like sometimes, right. I'll be honest, we pick up stuff from like Japan, especially where
there are some sources in Japan that, hey, they've got an inside line sometimes, but then sometimes
they just write stuff. And I had example, but Automotive News is legit. And when Automotive News reports on something like this, you kind of believe them because I've been doing this long enough that they're not out to just like pick up a rumor and do a big report on it. And when you look at this story, it's quite an extensive report. There are two mentions of Camaro. There's one mention of EV sedan. So they're not trying to like make a big story about this.
It's, right.
It's just one mention. And that to me lends a little bit of credence to it, that they're not trying to stir up clicks, that this is, they had a bunch of information. They presented it. And that's the information that they have, at least right now. And like you said, I wrote up the story and I wrote it up. We don't know whether this is true. There is, let me try to find it. There's an interesting point in this story where they talk about current product planning. Basically, they talk, oh, here it is. Neither plant, let me go back. They're talking specifically about the Bolt EV and the Bolt EUV, which are obviously two current Chevy EVs. And they say neither plant has products assigned beyond 2025. One forecaster said their fate likely will be determined by the next UAW labor contract set to be negotiated in 2023. So even Automotive News is saying that none of this is kind of firm, set in concrete plans, that, you know, the United Auto Workers and their union contract is kind of going to determine some of this. But as of right now, it sounds like the Camaro could become a sedan, which is
bizarre. Let's talk about this here for a little bit, because sure. I mean, it's not like it's a surprise that General Motors will have some sort of performance electric vehicle in the works. It's not necessarily a surprise that it will be a sedan. I mean, we have the Mustang Mach-E, which is a four-door crossover,
right?
But what's significant there is the Mach-E is sold alongside the standard Mustang.
Correct.
And this report presumes that
the Camaro is going to die. And
traditional Camaro is gone.
Right. That is both a sedan and electric, and presumably some sort of performance vehicle.
Now, I mean, considering what's going on right now with the Mach-E, I haven't looked at Mach-E sales recently. From what I gather, I mean, it's it's doing pretty well. I don't know that it's
fine as far as I know. It's not maybe not gangbusters, but it's not a failure either, is what I understand.
So, I mean, I wonder, do you think General Motors with Chevrolet and their performance sedan could be trying to target a market that's not being served by Ford? I mean, if they're specifically calling it a sedan instead of going into the crossover realm, I mean, you could argue this, that a sedan is still going to be more sporty in nature than a crossover.
Sure. Absolutely.
I mean, I wonder if that makes sense for General Motors to create a Camaro electric sedan.
Yeah. And I think something that's worth pointing out is that for years, since 2019 now, we've been hearing that the Camaro is going to die after the current generation, that GM did not intend on replacing it with another vehicle. Mm-hmm. So is it better to die or to become a sedan, to paraphrase a famous statement? Like, should the Camaro just die and not be around anymore? Or would you rather have a Camaro that still has the Camaro badge, but is now something completely different than what it has been for the past 60 years?
You know, I had that very conversation with our global editor in chief, John Neff.
Oh, really? I think I missed that.
A long time ago when the Mach-E, actually it was just after the Mach-E came out. And in fact, we were on the previous incarnation of the Official Motor One podcast talking about it, where he and I just had a knockdown, drag out, not a fight, but I think at one point I said, I can call my house a baked potato. It doesn't mean I live in a baked potato. This four-door crossover, you can call it a Mustang, and that doesn't mean it's a Mustang. I was obviously on the side of Mach-E is not a Mustang. And he asked point blank, he said, well, would you rather the Mustang just die? And I said, yes. The Mustang was a specific type of vehicle, two-door, front engine, rear-wheel drive, swooping car. If the only way to move forward is to have a higher riding four-door crossover turning all four wheels, it doesn't matter the engine. The Mustang was never defined by an engine. A lot of people like to say that it was, that the only real Mustangs are a V8, but you could always get different engine sizes, six cylinders, four cylinders throughout Mustang's history. It was defined by it being the two-door, swoopy, fastback car turning the rear wheels. If the only way forward is to get rid of that, then, I mean, you are getting rid of Mustang. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, things come and go. Mm-hmm. Time moves on. You make a new car. You can call it Mustang-inspired. But if it completely changes the formula, and now here we are, possibly looking at Camaro the same way. The Camaro has always been a swoopy two-door fastback turning the rear wheels in a low slung car. Would it still be a Camaro if you added two more doors but kept everything else? That's a little more gray area to me.
Yeah.
It's more of a gray area. Yeah. And just like with Mustang, the engine doesn't matter. I know there are going to be people out there that are furious at that. You know what? You could always get a four-cylinder V6 or a V8 and a Camaro, and it was still a Camaro. That's not elemental to the formula.
Right.
The two doors, low slung car, swoopy fastback design. Those are the things that have never changed. So adding two more doors, is that upsetting? I don't know, folks. Podcast at MotorOne.com. I think this is something that really warrants a bigger, deeper discussion, especially now with the Mustang Mach-E out and in public hands. I still get all kinds of feedback from Mustang people that are just furious that it's called Mustang.
Mm-hmm. Same.
There's more discussion here. And if Camaro could go the way of a four-door sedan, I mean, I don't know. Maybe the Camaro doesn't have to die as a four-door sedan. If it still has rear-wheel drive, you know, a swoopy fastback design.
Yeah, I just the more I think of it, the more I think of is why, like, you know, even if you made it slightly bigger, if you had a slightly bigger coupe, EV coupe, and called it Camaro, like, wouldn't that be enough? Like, it just seems like Camaro and two doors are so tightly associated with each other. I don't know why you change things now. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a good subject for debate, and we want to hear from all of you out there on it. Podcast at MotorOne.com, or comment on our YouTube video, comment on the articles that go up at MotorOne.com every Friday. Follow Bruce and me on Twitter. I'm at CH Ridey, and Bruce is at ChrisBruce1985. Since we're talking about comments, let's segue into some comments that we had last week. We've had some comments from some familiar welcome fans and from some new people.
Do you mind if I start?
Yeah, go ahead. No, I don't mind, actually. Go right ahead.
So this one is from Josiah, who has commented before. This is actually not from this past week. It was from 2 weeks ago. Yes. Our episode last week kind of went long. We didn't get a chance to answer
this.
But I'm going to go ahead
and read it now. But it's a good comment and poses some good questions.
Oh, yeah, totally. So love the show, guys. This past week, I was lucky enough to see several cars that haven't come out yet or just recently did. I spotted the new Honda Civic, Nissan Pathfinder, Jeep Grand Cherokee L, Ford Bronco, and the new Genesis G70 and GV80. I was wondering, which new car from 2022 are you most and least interested in? Keep up the good work.
You want to answer? You want to go first? Or you want me to go
first? I've got more of a holistic answer than a specific model answer, okay. If I'm honest with you. I want to see interesting Japanese cars again, because I feel like Honda and Toyota and, Nissan, they've kind of dropped the ball in recent years. I'm very, very curious to see the new 400Z or Nissan Z, whatever they happen to call it. I feel like Toyota, though... Like the Supra was
kind of
a letdown.
You don't like BMW Supra?
Not really.
Come on. ouch. Yeah, I said
Lexus. I love the LC, but I feel like otherwise Lexus has kind of been in a weird period. Acura with the new TLX is doing well, but I'm not sure what the new Honda Civic Type R is going to be like. I'm a little bit worried that that's going to be disappointing. And as a Subaru owner, Subaru design is just in a bad place. Like everything that we're seeing from the new WRX is bad. Like they're just so conservative. They're not trying to do anything interesting. I want to see some interesting cars from Japan. I think whatever the new Z is, I'm curious to see. But, you know, I want to see whatever this rumored Lexus Land Cruiser based vehicle is going to be, that type of thing. So not exactly what model I'm most and least interested in, just more of a general thing. I want to see some interesting stuff from Japan. How about you?
I want to see the Lightning, the new F-150 Lightning.
Okay. Yeah, totally.
I think that's going to be a game changer, and a lot of people don't realize it. Yeah. It's going to be a game changer in the way it handles as a truck, because it's going to have independent suspension and a 50-50 weight distribution. Come on. You've never had that in a truck before. I think it's going to be surprisingly fun to drive. And of course, it's going to have gobs of power. It's going to be the fastest F-150 Ford's ever made. Mm-hmm. But it's also going to be an exceptionally cost-effective vehicle for contractors and for businesses that have fleets of trucks that are not being driven more than, say, 100 or 150 miles a day. A lot of local driving. When they're done for the day, they go back to the office, they go back to the building, they plug them in, they're fueled up, ready to go the next morning. Depending on who you talk to for cost analysis, electric vehicles like that are going to pay for themselves in an extraordinarily short amount of time, once you figure in fuel costs that you won't have anymore, maintenance costs like oil changes, things of that nature that you won't have anymore. And I think Ford was smart to keep it conservatively styled, because it still looks like a proper F-150. It still has all of the capabilities. Will people be towing cross country with it? No. The infrastructure isn't there yet. The charging infrastructure isn't there yet. And there are too many rural areas that just aren't well suited to an electric vehicle yet. And that needs to be stressed yet. Give it another 5-10 years at the max, I think. And this is going to be just like an internal combustion vehicle is today. So I think the Lightning, when it comes out, yeah, man, I'm really excited to see that. I'm really excited to get behind the wheel and drive it. And vehicle that I'm least interested in.
Here, let me add one thing to your Lightning comment real quick. So for anyone who listens to us, our sister site, Inside EVs, IEVs, we call them, they have a podcast that comes out every Friday.
Very good one.
And one of the people who are commonly on them and has been on with us before, Tom Malogny, he got to check out a pre-production F-150 Lightning. And granted, this was a pre-production vehicle, but he was saying that what he was seeing on the range calculator on that vehicle was kind of more than what Ford is even saying that it's capable of. A number more than 300, put it that way. He didn't go into specifics. He just said it was more than 300. So I think the Ford F-150 Lightning could be a really, really impressive truck when it arrives. That's all I want to say.
Absolutely. And sorry, but I'm not really interested in the new WRX.
I
think it's for the reasons, Bruce, that you talked about. I mean, I don't know that it's the least interesting vehicle to me for 2022 that I want to see, but I can tell you that I don't really care. And
I'm way more interested in the new GTI than I am the WRX. Yeah.
And once upon a time, I cared. I really cared about Subaru. Upon a time, I was all over the 05 Legacy GT when that came out. I loved that car. You know, the Rexes through the 2000s, I was all about. And you're absolutely right on their styling. They just seem to be, I don't know what they seem to be. It doesn't look terrible, but it doesn't look good. There's a lot of awkwardness in the design, I think. And
I don't think it's awkward. I don't think there's, if from what we are seeing of the new WRX, you would be hard pressed to tell it apart from the current WRX. It's just that they've
I'm not a fan of that one either.
I'm not either, but it just seems like they decided on something and that they're not going to deviate from it and they're not going to experiment with something new. And Subaru has always been somewhat conservative in terms of styling, but this is just too much in the current climate of things, where you look at, you know, Honda's kind of pushing things forward. Toyota's pushing things forward. I don't know, man. I'm not happy with it.
Right. And yeah, I mean, Josiah, great question.
Totally.
And I wish we had more commenters that could that kind of engage our brains like that. We want to have these conversations with you. Bruce, can I read a comment that we had on YouTube last week?
Of course. Go for it.
Okay, where did it go? Come on. We're live here. Well, we're not live, but we're almost live.
You know, we're live to tape, man.
Okay, so this came in just 2 days ago, and I thought it was very insightful. It was from a person named Ted here on YouTube. Being an owner, and this is in response to the question we had last week of a lady who was looking for her next fun vehicle, had a lot, who enjoyed the heck out of her Veloster and was looking for a fun vehicle under $50,000. We ended up tossing out a lot of Hyundai and Kia options.
Yeah, Stinger G7 Stinger, were the two kind of
Santa. We tossed out the Santa Cruz.
We did.
And I want to read. I'm reading Ted's article or Ted's comment here because he's an owner of a 2019 Veloster, so he's kind of giving us a little bit of that extra insight there. Being an owner of a 2019 Veloster, as you know by now, I see the Stinger and Santa Cruz both has natural progressions from it. The Stinger is a solid choice for going with a more substantial performance vehicle. The Santa Cruz is a solid choice for upgrading in the quirky nature, and I like how that's presented because Veloster is a rather quirky vehicle.
Yep.
In the little hatchback section, and Santa Cruz is also going to be a quirky vehicle in the compact truck section. He also points out that also with the top drive train that seems to be from the Veloster N in the Santa Cruz, it should be sufficiently fun too. And I've been saying that all along. With the dual clutch transmission, all wheel drive in that Santa Cruz, that could be a fun little street truck, carrying a bit more weight than the N, but hey, still a hoot. Between the two, I'd go Stinger since it has the hatch utility and a bit more substance about it. But if you gave me a Santa Cruz for my Veloster, I'd still be thrilled. I think, I'm not just reading that comment because he supported our opinions, because there are so many choices you could go for.
There are a ton of vehicles sub 50 grand you could buy, but the woman we talked about, she's a fan of the Hyundai family of vehicles, which is why we chose Kia and Genesis and Hyundai as well with Santa Cruz. Yeah.
Yeah. And, I just keep coming back to Santa Cruz. I have a feeling that when a Santa Cruz arrives to the Hyundai dealership, that's about 3 miles away from me, I'm going to have to go in and take a pretty close look at it. It's bad enough I rode through the Kia dealership yesterday and they've got a new shipment of K5s in, and I'm really liking the K5.
Really?
And I can get it all wheel drive. I priced up a lease. I could be leasing that for about $200 a month with my trade in.
That ain't bad at all.
And that's being really modest on my trade in too. And right now is not a time to be modest because used cars are a hot commodity. So, I mean, it's been very tempting, but when you look at the K5, it should be a hatchback. And I don't know why Kia didn't do that, because the trunk lid is so extreme. I mean, it's laughably small. You open it up. I mean, there's good access vertically at the back, but the horizontal, you have, I think, what's that? Maybe
8 inches,
maybe 7 or 8 inches before it hits the back window. Mm-hmm. And it's like, why don't you just make that a hatchback? Mm-hmm. The access back there and the capability of that vehicle would be amazing, and it would still look the same. That's the point. A lot of people don't like the look of a hatchback. It would look the same as it does right now.
I do not understand why the Stinger is not more popular. Honestly, like, I feel as though in terms of a car, like, let's say, you know, you're married, you've got a kid or two, you're looking for something affordable but that's still fun to drive, like when you're alone. I do not understand why the Stinger is not a more popular vehicle.
Well, I think it's just in its most desirable form, I think it's just too expensive for the target market that Kia is going for. I think it is. I think that's why it's not. I mean, I would take the Stinger over a K5, but I'm not interested in doing a purchase. I'm not going to take that big of a depreciation hit, and I don't want that big of a monthly payment. And they don't have great incentives for leases.
That's true.
So, if you're going to have a big monthly payment like that, I mean, there are other cars I'd rather have, to be honest.
I think you are raising all of your points are correct. The thing is that whenever I talk about buying a car, I'm thinking about buying a 2 or 3 year old car,
right?
Because that's what my parents kind of always did. They would always let someone else take the depreciation hit and then take like a 2 or 3 year old Stinger.
I really haven't seen many used Stingers. I don't know exactly what they're going for. And from Kia's perspective, they don't care.
Yeah.
I mean, they already sold the car. Sure. They don't care. They don't care how many times it changes hands on the used market or what it sells for. So
yeah,
if they can't sell the car new, they're just not going to sell it at all. So
yeah.
Yeah, some good comments. Do we have anything else to go on there?
That's all I got. Let's start talking about how fun our weekends were. We had some fun.
The Chris's Excellent Adventure. So, everybody. I did an 80s, my first ever 80s, 90s car show. And it was just local here at Rapid City. But I think Bruce had a better time. Tell him what you did.
So I am going to put this out for our producer, Martin, only because when you took your big trip from South Dakota to Michigan, I was listening to IEVs, the podcast, and he was saying how shocked he was that you drove 3,000 miles in a weekend. So I was nowhere close to that. So I drove to my parents' house, which is near Akron, Ohio. And then my dad and I went to the Pittsburgh Vintage Grand Prix. He drove there. I drove back. So all in, I was about 400 miles for the weekend. So I went to the Pittsburgh Vintage Grand Prix. It is a fantastic event. It's been going on for several years now. I think my dad and I were talking, I think the first year we went was either 09 or 10. There wasn't one last year, unfortunately, obviously because of COVID, but we had a ton of fun. It was probably the most attended event we've gone to since we've been there.
Good. What does one see at the vintage Grand Prix? I mean, I'm assuming vintage race cars. Are there specific categories? Is it a menagerie, or is it just one specific type?
So for us, at least, it is a bit less about the vintage Grand Prix and more about the car show that shows up there.
Okay.
Because it is both cars and motorcycles, and they have sections for everything. It is an absolutely wonderful event. We actually didn't watch that much racing this year. We just kind of took in the car show and enjoyed it. So I will show you my favorite car that was there.
Yes. Right now. Let's see some pictures. You need to go to Motor One Podcast, everybody.
We're going
to
be
on YouTube to see some of these photos, because I think we're going to be, how many cars are at this event?
I wouldn't be shocked if it's high 100 to 1,000.
Wow. Okay.
It's certainly high. It's very, very easily in the hundreds. No doubt.
But your photos are going to be a lot better than mine, I think it will get to, but yeah, Motor One Podcast on YouTube.
So you can, here was you can my
see what we're looking at here.
This is look the first time I've ever seen that here. This is for anyone watching, this is an Alpine 610. So obviously it was imported Alpine at some point. Alpine, obviously they exist today. They're owned by Renault. They are their performance brand. The 610 it kind of blends 80s and 90s looks. It has pop-up headlights, so it kind of has that 80s things going. It's got a bunch of glass. Despite having a fairly long nose, the engine is actually in the rear. It is the PRV, the Peugeot Renault Volvo V6, which is also in the DeLorean, but this is the turbocharged version. And it's just cool as hell. I've never seen one in this country. So someone imported, it was actually in the Italian car area. They must have just let them park there.
It kind of looks Italian. Let's let them in.
Despite being French, it has an Italian look. So as we were talking about doing this topic today, there was one point that I wanted to make, and I don't know if this is how you are at car shows, but do you walk by like Ferraris and Lamborghinis to find interesting stuff when you're at shows? Because at least my dad and I do.
For sure.
So let me make sure I'm still. Yes. So here is one of the few images of Ferraris that I took. So you can see in the upper right here, you can see the prancing horse.
I was wondering where you're going.
Sure, is an F355. It's there. But I was more taking a picture of the guy's Corgi, because that interested me far more than the Ferrari. Because the Ferrari guy just wrote a check, but the Corgi guy, he's got to live with that Corgi every day. And as a Corgi owner, that's a far bigger challenge.
No, you're not wrong. And I mean, I love looking at all kinds of cars. Sure. You know, I'm not going to just ignore Ferraris or other exotics that are at a show. But I remember, I think it was 2019. Yeah, it was 2019. Just as the C8 Corvette was announced, at the same time, there was a big Corvette rally going on out here in the Black Hills, and I was attending their car show, and there were hundreds and hundreds of Corvettes from all around the country. And as I'm walking down some of the back streets of Spearfish, South Dakota to get up to Main Street, I come upon a Citation X11.
Oh, wow.
That's a Chevy Citation X11. And I lost my mind, because you never see those cars. And it was the X11 with the sporty stripes and the wheels that had all of like probably 80 horsepower. And it's like one block over is a row of fantastic Corvettes. And here's the Chevy Citation X11 that I took a bunch of pictures of. So, yeah, I know how you feel, man.
So I'm going to just... So for anyone watching on YouTube, I'm sorry if this feels like old man shares his slides, but that's kind of sort of what it is, because
let's see the next one.
Yeah, I had a fun time this week. So again, this is anyone watching on YouTube, this is more shots of the Alpine. But for Smith, I'm just going to, you can see the intakes along the lower fenders. You can see this really subtle intake just at the tip of the rear lid and the one that's kind of inside the car to let it breathe.
There's no way anybody would know that's a rear engine car unless they actually knew about the car. I mean, that's what a fantastic looking machine.
One thing I thought was funny, though, and these will be the next pictures coming up, is that back in the day, Citroën owned Maserati, and Citroën made the model the SM, and it had a Maserati sourced V6 engine. So they let the Citroën SMs park with the Italian cars. So we will be seeing that now. You can see two SMs. The one we're looking at.
I never get tired of seeing those either.
So the one we're looking at is dark brown, and the guy had this thing fully kitted out. In the inside, he had a period correct Polaroid camera. He had like some bizarre Motorola car phone from what must have been from the 70s. Like, he had a pack of Gittin S, however you say them, cigarettes on it. Like,
oh, this dude, wow,
clearly got it. So that was the brown one. The guy with the white one, or the cream one, whatever you want to call it, he had the hood up. So you can see the image we're looking at now. Those green things are the oil accumulators. So these models, they have an oleo pneumatic suspension on them. So it's not hydraulic and it's not springs. It's an oil controlled suspension, and those things tell you which ones have that in it. And the interesting thing is, and as I'm zooming in, I think you can see the Maserati Trident on the engine cover
because just barely.
Yeah. Because like I said, this is a Maserati sourced engine. It's just in a Citroën. And the other thing is, this is the accumulator for that oil I was just talking about. And it says refill only with LMH liquid. And it's green because that liquid was green. And if you scroll up, caution, do not use brake fluid. Refill only with green LMH liquid. Because if you use brake fluid, which was also hydraulic, I think it would screw up the seals or something like that.
Yeah,
bad brake, things would happen. Put it that
brake
way.
Brake fluid, extraordinarily corrosive.
But yeah, I did take another shot. Make sure I'm sharing that. Yeah. And you can see the Maserati Trident.
Yeah, you can see it a little bit better there.
Yeah. That was cool.
Fantastic cars, man.
I have to give two quick shout outs to two people before we move on to yours.
I could look at this all day.
If you can look at it all day.
You have sort of like a slideshow view up right now, and I'm seeing all kinds of stuff that I want to look at. Look at that RX-7.
So this guy,
What year is that?
I think it was an 83.
Yeah, that's an early 80s RX-7.
Yeah, so this guy, he is a single owner. This is a single owner example. It's always been his possession. But the thing I love about it, and we've talked about this before, that freaking graphic equalizer that's physical on the dashboard. And look at how clean this is. This is a one owner car. I think it was 83. But yeah, it
looks fantastic. Is that a brown interior or like a
it's
maroon?
Kind of a maroon.
A maroonish interior. Okay.
Maroon.
It feels very early 80s.
Totally.
But very early 80s. Fantastic.
Speaking of the two things that I love in the world, dogs and cars, let me find it. I got to give a ton of credit to this guy. So I saw this guy walking around the Italian car thing before.
More Mazdas that we're looking at here. More RX-7s.
Still the Mazda row. Didn't know anything about him, but he's got a adorable Swedish Valhunt, which is... the story I've heard is that the Vikings, when they arrived in Wales, the Swedish dogs bred with the Welsh dogs, and you got a corgi, and I own a corgi and love him. So the Swedish Valhunt is the progenitor of the corgi. But also, this guy owns a friggin' sweet RX-7. Yeah. How can I not like this guy?
Yeah, that's an FD, right?
Yeah, that's an FD.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then super quick, one last thing that I want to share here. I guess if anyone is in the market, if anyone wants a Dragon Ball Z wrapped Honda Beat, this one, if you're watching on YouTube, happens to be for sale. Here's one side. here's the other side. And if you really want it, here's the nice man's phone number.
That is a Honda. That is a 91 Honda Beat.
Yep.
And there's not like a little cigarette. It is wrapped.
Yeah.
Hood, sides. That is wrapped. You know what? If you're going to do a Dragon Ball Z wrap, it works on a Honda Beat. I got to say, it works.
Yeah. And so the thing is, let me see. So this was the same. Here, I'm going to have to go back to the whole thing. It was the same owner. He also had a Honda Acty there, which is the van. So you can see he was talking to everybody. He was a real personable guy. But this
can we talk about that? Can we talk about that S2000 behind him there?
Yeah. Yeah. That wasn't his. He didn't own that one, but he owned
Honda S2000.
He also owned the Beat that's for sale. So yeah. Now your turn. Show me what you got.
Very cool. I don't know how on earth I can follow that. So let me just spell this out a little bit. So Rapid City, South Dakota, there's a surprisingly diverse car scene here. Mm-hmm. And this past Saturday, there's a group out here called Photomotive, a couple guys, amazing automotive photographers, amazing enthusiasts. And for quite a while, they've been putting together a lot of shows. They single-handedly got Cars and Coffee moving out here in the Black Hills, and it's become a big deal. Lots of cars show up. They host it once a month. They decided a while back, hey, let's do an 80s and 90s event. There's a place out here called Game On. Mm-hmm. Where they have like laser tag stuff inside. They have a nice venue, and they partnered up with them to host what they called Carcade, 80s and 90s night. They had 80s and 90s music. They had a taco truck out there with food. There were games set up outside. And of course, people showed up with cars. They had room for 40 cars. So it's not hundreds and hundreds. Room for 40 cars. I was there with my 95 Mustang. I also took my 1985 General Hustler Pro freestyle BMX bike that I restored a few years ago. Because, I mean, hey, I'm a child of the 80s. But let me share some of the pictures that I took of the event there. And
I'm
hopefully
looking forward to see them. I haven't seen – you showed a few, and then I said don't show anymore.
Hopefully,
I want to see
hopefully this
podcast
works for me. And, hey, vamp for me a little bit, because guess what, Bruce? The share isn't working again.
Okay. Well, I can talk about
that.
No. You're good. I can talk more about the event that I went to. So one of the big highlights this year, and it's the first time they're doing it this year, is that they had vintage Indy cars. Specifically ones from kind of the mid to late ish 60s up until kind of the early to mid ish 80s. And the one really, really special, really, really cool one that was there was one of the turbine powered cars. You kind of don't get to see. So I will share a photo of that now that I was able to.
I've got mine ready if we want to.
Okay. Well, real quick. Here's a turbine-powered Indy car. It's amazing. It sounds like the world's loudest vacuum cleaner. Like it just
goes
around the track. You know, it wasn't going that fast, but yeah. Okay, let's see what you got.
Turbine-powered Indy car. I counter that with a Z31 300ZX turbo.
Yeah, I know.
This thing
intake on the left-hand side.
This thing, and let me tell you a little bit of backstory, because I talked to the owner of this car at length.
Okay.
And friends, this is what being an enthusiast is all about, because this car looks gorgeous. It's gorgeous outside. It's gorgeous inside. He first saw this car like 5 or 6 years ago sitting in somebody's backyard here in Rapid City. Wow. And he always loved the Z31. Mm-hmm. And he went up to the house one day and said, hey, would you be interested in selling it? And the guy's like, oh, I don't know. It hasn't run in a while. I'd like to, you know, let me see if I can get it running. It had rust in it. He said he had to do all kinds of welding, patch of the floors. I mean, when I say he saw it sitting in a backyard, it wasn't like, you know, it's sitting on the pedestal in the backyard. It's like it sunk into the backyard. And these cars aren't worth a ton of money. The Z31s, you can find a nice one, the turbo with a T-top, for like maybe 10 or 15 grand. That's really,
yeah, I was thinking right around 10 was the number.
Yeah, I mean, that's really not that much money. So and, you know, restoring a vehicle like this with the idea of getting a return on investment? No,
no.
You're doing this simply because you love the car. And this guy was amazing to talk to. And yeah, when you look at this car, it is just gorgeous. It is the exact, well, the only thing that I wouldn't want on my Z31 300ZX, I'm not a big fan of white. It looks good.
That's what I need a color for those cars, though.
I would rather have it red or silver. But I mean, I'm being like really nitpicky here. This thing was just gorgeous. T-tops.
And this is the one car you and I talked. You said it had digital gauges, too.
It had the digital gauges, manual transmission. It's mostly stock. I mean, he's got some A-pillar gauge pods in there. But yeah, I mean, this is probably the highlight of the show for me. And let me click through my slideshow here a little bit just to give you an idea. I mean, 40 cars, all of the cars, well, just about all of the cars there.
You have to brag and show yours too, because I saw it on Twitter.
Driver quality. So. We're gonna get there. I just switched the screen now.
Yep.
That's actually my Mustang with the bike in the background. But more importantly, sitting right next to me is a 1990 Corvette ZR1 that is immaculate and it has extremely low miles. And I am deeply, deeply, deeply in love with the ZR1.
Yeah.
So many people don't realize how special that car is. Until the new C8 Z06 comes out, you're looking at the only Chevrolet Corvette to ever have a double overhead cam V8. And a lot of people say, wait a minute, they never put a double overhead cam V8 in the Corvette. Yes, they did. From 1990 to 1995, the Corvette ZR1 had a 5.7 liter double overhead cam V8 with a red line, I think, of about 7,000, maybe just a click over 7,000.
And sounds unlike Lotus, if I'm not mistaken. I think Lotus did a lot of that design work.
Lotus and Mercury Marine.
I think Lotus did the design work, but Chevy couldn't do it in-house, so Mercury Marine built the engines, I think is the way it worked out.
I can't remember specifically, but I mean, in 1990, that was 395 horsepower. That was supercar territory at that time. Yeah. And these cars were exceptionally fast. And just looking at them, you wouldn't know they were really any different from an L98 350 that they had back then, which I think was in 1990 was 245 horsepower. So yeah, there were two of these. There's a local family that they each have one in the family. I didn't grab a good picture of the second one, but yeah, just gorgeous car. Here I switched over. This is my Mustang 95 Mustang GT at the show. I had it all nice and polished up, and I had my 85. That's the most expensive BMX freestyle bike in the world. Because it sat, let me give you a little story. That is my bike that I had as a child. And in high school, I decided I was going to spray bomb it red because I liked red and it looked terrible. And then I went off to college and I took the bike all apart and took it with me to college. I was like, oh, I'll fix it and put it back together. Mm-hmm. It sat in a box for 25 years. And finally, I painted it blue. I got a good blue paint job on it in 2010. And then in 2015, I finally decided enough's enough. Let's get it put back together. And I got it put back together and I'm testing it and riding it. And I'm like, wow, I'm a lot fatter than I was when I was a kid. And pulled back to do a neat little wheelie and sort of fell off and sort of dislocated my foot and broke my ankle, which is now bionic. And yeah, that was about a $15,000 out of pocket medical expense. So yeah, that's the most expensive freestyle bike. But yeah, I mean, I got the Mustang all cleaned up. I was only one of two Mustangs there. There aren't
got to tell me about that burnt orange Volvo 240 sitting right. Was it a wagon, coupe, sedan? No. Go back to that last picture. We're not done here.
Hold on. Let me scroll through because I think I. There it is.
Okay.
So yeah. I don't know much about that Volvo.
Aftermarket.
I didn't get much of a chance to talk to that person, but I mean, okay. Yeah, just a good looking older Volvo brick, man. I mean, it's Yeah, I dug it when it was there. I
think those headlights
certainly stood out.
Post 86 or 87 is when they switched.
Yeah, it's got the flush headlights. So yeah. I mean, it's not the early 80s, but yeah,
I prefer that look personally. But
there was a nice mix. Everybody that was watching on YouTube saw me click through here a little bit. Let me go back to some of these.
I haven't seen one of those drop pickup trucks, one of those drop mini trucks in ages. Next to it.
Yep. That's
a Nissan hard body, I think.
Yep. A 95, I think, Nissan hard body. There were a lot of 90s vehicles there. Sure. But I mean, we did have some from the 80s. You know, there's your standout at 99 OG Viper RT10. That's, I don't know if 99 was, I can't remember if 99 or 2000 was the last year of that first generation Viper,
I mean,
if you've never seen one of those in person,
wait, is that an NSX and like teal next to it?
It is. We'll jump back to that.
I've never seen that color on an NSX before.
It's a customized NSX. These are some of the cars that were parked inside. So we've got the next slide over here. Beautiful E30 BMW convertible.
And a Typhoon next to it.
Just mildly tweaked. You can't get more 90s than a GMC Typhoon. And yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, the Typhoon looked great. He showed up with a friend that had a Cyclone. So we had a Cyclone and a Typhoon.
Naturally.
At this 80s, 90s party. I mean, yeah, when you think about it, okay, this is Rapid City, South Dakota. Literally, I'm 50 miles from the geographical center of the United States of America. And to have this kind of collection, it's still just massively impressive. We'll jump back to my
brag about your model kit.
We'll jump back to that here in a bit. This gorgeous 944. This was a blue 944 Porsche that came 80s. In.
It doesn't have the came in later one.
Yeah,
like a mid 80s 944.
Beautiful 944.
I like that color.
This was my artsy shot. This is the Acura. This is the NSX. And it was artsy because it was actually really dark in there. Okay. So I was like, instead of trying to really brighten up the photo, we'll just go dark. Cause he had the ground effects going on with the afterglow and all that. Beautiful NSX though. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Rapid Was that City's a wrap or paint you think?
Oh no, it's paint. It's definitely paint.
Okay.
I'm in love with this car.
That one that's the other shot I saw before this that you confused me with. I was thinking it was a Daihatsu Charade. You're telling me it's a Mitsubishi Colt Turbo.
I was wrong on that. It's a 1986 Toyota Starlet, and I can't believe I didn't get that. Okay. It's a 19, and I mean, obviously imported from Japan, right-hand drive, 86 Toyota Starlet.
With the turbo.
And I think that's a 1.3 liter turbo making a little over 100 horsepower. The thing was just clean and just awesome. I'll say, I mean, we're out here with Ellsworth Air Force Base, which is about 10 miles away. So you'll see a lot of the enlisted people there at the base. They have some means to get cars to and fro that some of us aren't quite as privy to. So,
little Honda, old Toyota onto a C-130 and Sam doesn't ask any questions.
Yeah. So we've got here, I mean, you know, Honda Civic Del Sol, nothing wrong with the Del Sol.
Yeah, but there's a Supra in the back. Wait, go back to that last picture.
We got to go back to the last picture. Yeah, there's an A70.
Nice looking.
Yeah. There's an A70 Supra. I've got a picture of it in here somewhere as well. Yeah. Nice A70 Supra.
Yeah.
That's a black Celica GT next to the Supra that looks even better.
Okay.
It was just fantastic. But yeah, the little Honda that I thought was pretty cool.
Jurassic Park.
This pretty much speaks for itself. Wrangler. This is a replica Jurassic Park Jeep Wrangler, like from the original first. I mean, it wasn't used in the movie. It's a replica of what they used. But yeah, Jurassic Park Jeep. Does it get any more 80s or 90s than that? Yes, it does, because here's a Subaru SVX. You can see there's a little bit of rust over the rear quarter panel there.
That doesn't scare me away.
You don't see too many of these.
No.
And I've always been in love with them, and I was super stoked to see an SVX show up.
And speaking of cars that white suit super well, because that entire upper area is black, the contrast.
Yes.
The body looks great in white because the rest of it is always in black, and
Thanks for pointing that out. This is absolutely one I would want to have in white. because of that contrast. Give me a set of white wheels to go with this.
Yeah.
Now we're talking. Yeah, that's right. We're back to the RX-7. This is a good looking. That's a second gen RX-7.
Yep.
I didn't get much of a chance to talk to this person.
She's seen a little love there on the lower fender, but
yep. I'll be honest. Most of the cars at this event, I mean, they didn't come in on trailers. They're driver quality. And I don't mind that at all, because people, they're enjoying these cars for what they were meant.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Meant to be enjoyed. I think we're back. Yeah, we're back to my car. All right. Let me jump forward really quick. So, as people have seen on YouTube, probably behind me, I'm a big modeler. My father built this 125th scale 1980s era car carrier, and it's period correct, but it's also design correct, because he used to drive these trucks and he had drawings. So, I mean, he built the correct trailer. He built the correct head ramp. This was designed to haul 10 cars, and I will carry this around sometimes to shows, because I have a bunch of Mustang models. So I'm kind of like what you were talking about, Bruce, with the Citroen, where, you know, the guy was just going period correct with everything in there. I made sure, I mean, this is a 1980s semi truck. I made sure it was loaded with 80s and 90s cars, all built by me, 125th scale. Can you identify them all here really quick?
Let me try here. So I'm starting from the far right and going to the left, because I think I can do that. Okay,
far right, going to the left.
So we've got a T-Bird Super Coupe.
Turbo Coupe, 87 Turbo Coupe, yep.
SN95 Mustang below that.
That's technically a accurate model of my actual car, because I'm that big of a nerd, yes.
Flat nose 911 convertible.
Yeah, good eye.
A80 Supra.
That is an A80 Supra that I actually finished building 12 hours before this show. And from a few weeks ago, the people that said I hated the A80 Supra, I don't hate it. I built a model of it, but it's not my favorite. I would have rather built an A70.
Is that a Firebird or a Camaro below it?
That's a 94 Camaro below it. Good eye. Can you get the one
below that is?
That's tough to spot. That's a Lamborghini Diablo.
Okay. So I know the white truck next to the left of that is the Lightning that you just finished.
Yep, I just finished that a couple days before the show.
Above that, we got a Viper.
First gen Viper, yeah.
Mercury Capri?
Ooh, you're close. That's a Fox body SVO Mustang.
I'm close. Okay. They're both Fox bodies. And yep. Then it's either a 5 series or a 7 series.
On the head ramp?
Yeah, isn't it? Am I off? Oh it's going to be your no.
That's an 89 that's a Ford Taurus show. Yep.
Yes, it is.
And because you cannot go to an 80s or 90s car event and not represent robots, we have a Valkyrie from Macross. We have a Gundam from Gundam Wing. And
you gotta go to the middle one. That's
Prime. No, that's Sideswipe.
I'm sorry.
That's Generation Sideswipe.
I thought it was
Transformers Prime. Generations, Lamborghini Countach.
Okay.
Nobody picked up, you can't really see it in this photo, but I even had like the correct CD pocket holder that would go over a head visor.
Oh,
you know,
cool.
Sun visors.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I had that plugged in period correct with 80s and 90s discs in there. Yeah, I went full nerd on this.
So wait, go back to that picture real quick, can you?
Oh my gosh. Well,
I just wanted to mention in the background of that shot is one of our boss's favorite cars, and that is a Subaru Legacy SUS.
Good eye on that, man.
Yeah, yeah. Which is the Subaru Legacy sedan, but raised like an Outback.
Yep.
And our boss, John Neff, he has a thing for those. So I just want to throw that out real quick.
Yeah, across the way, that wasn't part of the show, but I mean, all car shows. Yeah, I mean, you had a lot of people show up.
Sure.
There's a full-on Integra drag car. You can see in the background, there's an early 80s 280Z. Mm-hmm. Mm. That was a pretty car. Of course, we had a couple Miatas there.
Of course.
This is
what the hell is that? A 240?
that's an RX-7, but I mean, it's a full-on drift car. I mean, here's a nice little overview of the venue. I mean, it's sure. not a big venue, but I've been out here for 7 years and I'm still amazed at the diversity of the car culture that exists. There's a Dodge Stealth RT twin turbo that showed up a little bit late that we see in this photo. There's a Fox Body Mustang, Volkswagen Corrado, just a great mix of stuff that, I mean, I could go on and on. We're running a little bit long anyways, but my first foray into an 80s, 90s event. And you know what? I would love to see this get hooked up with Radwood in some official way, because Radwood tours around at different places. Seeing just what they were able to pull off in about a month with 40 cars, plus others that showed up later, could be a thing. Could be a thing. And that was our adventure.
Well, that's very cool. Here, I got to... While you're showing your stuff off, it reminded me, I want to show one thing off. This is a car okay. I have never seen in the flesh before. So there was a Coffin Nose Cord at the event I went to.
Yes, look at that.
I've never, you know, I've been to some events, but I've never seen it. And I did take a picture of the interior, which is just wild with the turned, I guess that's, must be stainless steel. It almost looks like aluminum, but yeah.
Do you know what year that is? I mean, that's we're talking late 30s.
Zoom in on the thing.
36. A 36 Cord.
Yeah.
Man, have you ever been to the Cord?
No.
I don't even know if it's still there. The Cord Auburn Duesenberg place over in Indiana. That's a cool place to visit. And I tell you, when you look at those cars from the 30s are just so elegant and sweeping and just fantastic with all of their chrome and their fenders and their exposed pipes coming out of the engine. Yeah, just great stuff, man. So what have you been doing for your automotive adventures, Rambling About Cars listeners? We're sharing ours. Why don't you share yours? We would love to actually share some of your pictures if you have them. Email it over to podcast@motorone.com.
And just real quick, so if go to the motorone.com, the post, it'll be up Friday morning. And I'm going to upload some of the pics from my event. Smith, I suggest you do the same. And we'll throw them in a gallery. And there's a lot of stuff we didn't get to talk about, so you'll get to see it. So yeah, please do that.
And you can also jump into the comments. I think people can share pictures in the comments, can't they, Bruce?
Pretty sure. I've seen pictures in the comments. I think they can.
Pretty sure. Pretty sure they can.
You might have to host them like third party, not directly upload them, but it's doable. Yeah.
So, I mean, let's do that. Or if you don't want to do it there, you can send it over to us.
Yeah, we'll share. Email us and you've got.
We'll share them next week.
We'll love to see it.
It's summertime. It's car season. Let's have some fun, right?
Yep.
So. With that said, Bruce,
take us out. Yeah, man. So as always, good afternoon, good evening, or good night. Whenever you happen to be listening to us, we appreciate it. We love it. Like Smith was just saying, podcast@motorone.com is the email address. Motor One Podcast is where we're at on YouTube. You can find us on every streaming service you can think of. Trust me, we have the numbers. So yeah, we love hearing from you though. So if you have anything you want to tell us, please let us know. And otherwise, thank you very much for tonight. All right. Bye-bye.
See ya.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.